You're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review.
On today's episode, episode number 265, entitled, How to Overcome Anything with the Power of Your Mind, Soul, and Spirituality, I chat with Bruce Mattson. Bruce Mattson is a stage 4 cancer survivor and the author of the book From Goo to God. In today's episode, Bruce talks about his stage 4 cancer diagnosis several years back and the incredible approach he had for beating this deadly disease. Bruce covers his self-belief, his unwavering mindset, and the fact that he didn't think for a second that he was going to die, even when the cancer had him suffering tremendously. He also talks about his life's purpose, his spirituality, and how this helped him survive, and how he lives a purposeful life every single day. If you're wondering how to overcome any challenge using your mind and spirit, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. If you haven't checked out our YouTube channel yet, there's two reasons why. A, you're probably living under a rock and you haven't listened to any other Elite Man podcasts in the past. Or B, you're completely insane and you've just ignored all the messages that I've told you to check them out in the past. Either way, make sure you check it out right now. This is your last chance if you have not checked it out yet. And if it's been a while since you've checked some of our videos out, make sure you go back on and check them out today. I'm telling you, you are going to love some of our new videos. Go to elitemanmagazine.com/YouTube. And check them out today. Make sure you like some of the videos if you like them. Comment on some of the videos to leave your feedback and subscribe to our channel if you have not subscribed yet. And also, if you want to be super helpful and go one step further as an elite man, share some of our videos on your social media with some of your friends. I really do appreciate it personally, and I know my team does as well. We're trying to grow this as much as possible, so spreading that message with some of your friends who can benefit from watching these videos is one of the best things you can do for them and also for us. Again, go to elitemanmagazine.com/YouTube and check our channel out. You are going to love it. If you want to get more content, more information, and extra bonuses I don't post anywhere else, make sure you follow me on Instagram right now. It's at Justin Stenstrom. That's JustinStenstrom. I'm posting pretty much every day throughout the week, most days out of the week for sure, but almost every day. And it's all kinds of information regarding health, wealth, business, life, dating, relationships, confidence, and so much more. I'm telling you, you're going to love seeing some of the stories I post about and the feed posts I post all the time. It's pretty interesting. It's pretty fun. I'm loving Instagram right now, so make sure you follow me, Instagram.com/JustinStenstrom, or just jump on your phone right now, pull up the Instagram app, and it's at Justin Stenstrom. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from Elite Man Magazine, and my guest today is Bruce Mattson, the author of From Goo to God. Bruce, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
You're very welcome. I'm excited for the opportunity.
Yeah, cool, man. I'm excited to have you too. I know a little bit of your backstory. It's actually a very interesting story, but you're just kind of starting off to get your message out there, get your story out there. I know you're working on a website right now. You just released a book about a year ago, and it's pretty interesting to see you coming up, and I think you're going to be crushing it soon because you have this very unique story about beating cancer, about finding spirituality and using the mind to overcome a lot of these health issues that you were having, which really resonates with my audience. But Bruce, can you take about 30 seconds or so, maybe a minute? I know it's really quick to do and we'll dive into a lot of these aspects, but just kind of give us the overhead of your story of beating cancer and where you are right now.
In December 2013, I was diagnosed with stage 4 follicular lymphoma. It was throughout my whole body, every lymph node, all my bone marrow. And basically, it makes you look at eternity in the face. You know, it's like you see your mortality. And it was just an eye-opening moment that made me look at life differently and how I prioritize things, what's important, and what, you know, the people in my life and how I want to interact with them. It changed my whole focus more from being me-centered to other-centered. And I think I'm a better person for having gone through it.
How many people die from stage 4 cancer? What are like the odds of actually surviving that?
Well, usually when you hear stage 4, you know, you're not going to make it. The odds are greater that you're not going to. I don't know the exact numbers, but So, and especially when it's in your lymph nodes, which was in every lymph node in my body. So the moment the doctor gave me the diagnosis, I can swear that this is true. In my mind, I just thought, you're going to be fine. There was just absolutely no doubt in my mind. The hardest thing for me was thinking, how am I going to tell my parents? How am I going to tell my family? But I literally kind of got into a defensive mode thinking, how am I going to protect them from this? And I literally didn't feel like, woe is me. And I knew, because the doctor was explaining, I was going to have to do chemotherapy, and I ended up doing 18 rounds. But to me, the outcome was already determined. I just had the belief. I just knew I was going to work through it. I knew it was just a matter of enduring what I had to endure, and it would all work out. And it did.
What were you doing before cancer? Like, what was your job?
Well, I've been a teacher into my 29th year now, and I was a teacher, and then I've also been a elementary school principal for 7 years. So I've always been an educator, and so I just love working with kids, and I've done some coaching, and so that's pretty much been my life around schools.
Cool. So you get this diagnosis, and the first thing in your mind that pops in, was it your like own voice, or was it some kind of outside voice that was telling you it's going to be fine, you're going to beat it?
I believe it was something deep in my soul and my spirit that just said, you're going to be fine. It was just a definitive feel that I'm going to beat this. This not even in question. And so in my mind is, again, as a doctor's going through the plan of attack, I'm thinking, okay, this might be a little bit grueling. It might be difficult, but it's just a matter of time. It's a matter of getting through a day at a time, and I will get there. So it was just, it's hard to explain that. It just focused me so on, and maybe it's just the want to live, the want to continue on, the want to have purpose. And I wasn't going to not make it. I wasn't going to fall short. I was determined that I was going to be fine, and it did all work out.
What in your past, maybe your upbringing, your parents, your friends, the family around you, the decisions or obstacles that you overcame before that point, was there anything like that that you think set you up to have this unbelievable belief in yourself that when something as crazy as stage four cancer pops up in your life, you don't even have a split second of disbelief that you're going to beat this thing? It's just automatic. It's an automatic response that, you know, I'm going to have to go through some shit. I might have to struggle for a little bit, but I'm definitely going to beat this. You don't even think about it or hope that it's going to happen. You know it's going to happen. Was there anything in your past that you think led you to that belief in yourself?
Well, it's funny you say that. I played football, let's say, when I was in high school. Yeah. But I was undersized for the position I played. I was an offensive tackle. But I was very good because I knew I had to outwork the person in front of me. I had to be more determined. I had to have a better technique. I had to outthink them. So I learned how to through my will, through my effort, to achieve things that a person of my size probably wouldn't on the football field. I mean, so I was used to doing that. And I also coached. So I coached football, I coached basketball. And you're always trying to motivate kids to get more out of them than they think they have, you know. And so maybe just those things that are ingrained in me of always – you know, shooting for the best outcome, always believing that you can win, you know, always knowing there is a way if you seek it and you're determined to find it. So I think that years of coaching and having played and having success in both, knowing that works. And, you know, and I also am a Christian, and I have a faith that way. And I just believe that the good Lord was on my side too.
Yeah. Do you think too that it happened for a reason, that you got stage four cancer for a reason, and that there was a reason why, if you believe in God, like you believe in God, that God decided to give you cancer, or at least have these circumstances for you to get cancer? Is that did he have a plan for you to get that, and was there a true reason behind that?
Well, I don't believe God gives us cancer. I believe, you know, that's something that happens, but I do believe that he uses things like that to build you, to help change you, to improve you, to help mold you. And I did learn a lot of things about myself that I didn't like that needed to be changed. You know, so again, the effort, the will, the determination, setting goals, all those things, I needed that yet. But I also found some things that needed to change in me, and I needed some balance in that. Like I started talking about how I was very defensive. I didn't want to tell anybody that, oh, I can beat this on my own. And I have learned that, you know, that's not a healthy thing to do. And so a good example is, you know, I wasn't telling any of my friends, and my sister says, you've got to start telling your friends. And I said, no, I'm going to beat this. I'm not going to worry anybody. And she said, how they're going to find out. And she said, how are they going to feel if you don't tell them? And so, again, my defense mechanism is like, I'm just going to deal with this. I'm not going to worry anybody. So I started calling friends and ended up having 2-3 hour conversations. So every night I'd call people, and I didn't realize what great friends I had. And I didn't realize that doing something on my own is not the way. I mean, part of it is on your own, but letting people support you, let people care for you, let them help you. Don't let your pride get in the way of the people that love and care for you being there for you as they want to. And so I ended up, you know, just connecting with friends and having deeper level conversations because it was a serious matter, having conversations in a way like I hadn't had in years. So I actually grew closer to my friends and better appreciated my friends because I was going through this and we were having those deeper conversations.
I think there's a right way to do that, which is the way that you did it, as opposed to, say, using that as like a crutch or looking for sympathy or, you know, just kind of walking around and that is your new identity of this person who has cancer. And I think it worked for you, especially because you said immediately in your mind, I'm going to beat this thing. And so that was the outcome, that was the identity that you had already created in your mind, was this thing is something I'm going to beat at some point soon. And so, yeah, you can tell people because your mindset is of the right, you have the right mindset at that point. If you had a mindset of, say, I have this cancer and who knows what's going to happen, I might die, they're telling me I'm going to die, and then you just start just telling everybody just to tell them to, you know, get sympathy and that kind of thing, I think it works backwards where it actually backfires on you and you start believing that you're going to die in like 3 or 4 months and you're just, you know, kind of working it opposite. So I think the mind, the brain actually has two different ways of performing. And I think you used the right way to do it and got a lot of good energy, got a lot of help, got a lot of support. And those things helped you with your recovery as well. Would you say that's fair to say?
I do feel like initially I was a little too defensive, you know, and so I learned you have to reach out. But yes, the way you do it matters. Because you don't want to, you know, worry people unnecessarily. But like, for instance, initially I told people, oh, I got this cancer and I got to do chemotherapy. So I did downplay it, but I didn't use the term stage 4.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of protecting people. But then when my family found out about that, they got quite upset. And it's like, but I knew that would be the reaction. I knew that would take their emotions. And again, I didn't want to do that to them because, again, I truly believe I had this beat. It's just a matter of time. So, yes, it was a balancing act between being open, showing I need them, which I did, because no one can go through something like this on their own, but trying to protect their emotions and their feelings too.
So how did how long did it take actually for you to finally cure your cancer, beat it, reverse it, whatever you want to call it? How long did it actually take? What was that process like? Were there a lot of ups and downs along the way, or was it pretty smooth sailing once you decided that you're going to beat it and then you got some support? And like, was there any like times where you doubted yourself and were really down and like, maybe I can't beat this thing?
I didn't doubt at all.
Not for one second. Wow.
When I started the chemotherapy, I was so weak. At the time, I was 49 years old, and my parents saw that I was so weak. It's right now, it's kind of funny, but my dad and my mother came up to me, and my dad says, "Your mother and I need to talk with you." And they said, "You need to put your things in storage and come home." Now, here I am, a 49-year-old. I've been a building principal. I've been a varsity-level coach. And mom and dad are saying, you've got to come home. And everything in – now, here's the part where pride, will is probably a bad thing. Everything in my mind saying, no, you can deal with this on your own. But something deep down in my spirit said, okay, Dad, because I knew I had to. And I was that weak. It ended up that I was at my parents for almost, a little over 8 months. They had to take care of me. My mom in particular, I it was just brutal, how the weight I lost, the strength that I lost. So here I am, a 49-year-old man, having to live at home and be taken care of by his parents. So that was extremely humbling, but it also, again, I needed them, and I'm so blessed that I have them. That they were there for me, you know. So that's an example where I couldn't have willed myself through it and been living on my own. I just couldn't have made it that way, you know. When my mom's saying, "You have to eat more. Come on, she's cooking for me," you know. And I, you know, because again, it was just hard to get out of bed. It's hard to get through each day, and to bathe, shower was such an effort, and I was broken physically, but in my mind, it's just like, get through another day, because I know there was a limited number of days. What that number of days, I did not know, but I knew if I just kept getting through another day, I was getting closer to the end of the game. And eventually, probably after about 4 months of the chemotherapy, I started to feel a little bit better, started to gain a little more strength, and then slowly it just got better and better from there. But early on, I was like a child and needed to be taken care of almost like a child. It was tough, and I couldn't have done it without the support of my family and friends. So your own will can take you so far, but there's a point where you got to let the people love you and take care of you and not let that, because here's something that did happen along that way. I had a friend who picked me up one day and said, "Hey, I'm going to take you for a ride," and just to get me out of the house. And he could see how I was still just in denial and I'm fine type of thing. And he says, "Bruce," he says, "You're not a weak person just because you need help." You know, so that was the negative side of pride, being too proud. He says, "Let us help you. Let us be," he said, "we want to." But there's a good friend who opened my eyes. Again, just like my sister said, you got to tell your friends, you got to start. And again, so it opened communication, and I started to see myself a little bit differently, like, you know, to let people in a little more because they want to help. And because I would want to help someone, a family member, a friend in the same situation, I wouldn't want them to try to bear it themselves. So there's certain things in life you've got to let people in. And I just learned to find that balance. You know, it's one thing to be be determined in your own will, but you also have to let other people help carry that load.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I talk about this too often with mental health, especially with guys too. The guys listening to the show, I mean, guys in general tend to stay away from seeking help or even looking vulnerable in certain situations and asking that for that helping hand, because, you know, as guys, we're more prideful. We try to be tough. Yes. We try to pretend like it's not a big deal and that we're fine. But oftentimes it's the guys that need the most help. Sometimes guys have been holding stuff for so many years that, you know, after a while it just kind of boils over and they need that help. But even still, they'll pretend like everything's fine. And it's really sad to see guys suffering just because they're too prideful. They try to put on this facade that they're too tough. And man, reaching out for help is one of the best things you can do. And I highly recommend it for anything that you're going through, whether that's something like cancer or depression or anxiety or just a number of issues that guys face on a day-to-day basis. Asking for help and having that support around you, especially good friends, good family. But even if you don't, have like a big family or a spouse or, you know, loving sisters or brothers, I mean, you can just find help in anyone and people, especially professionals, therapists or whatever, that are out there that are willing to help you and just give you an ear or a different perspective to think about and support you along the way. I think it can go such a long way. Bruce, how long did it actually take before you were, say, 100% again? Was it like a year or two? Or because you said about 4 months of the chemo, I believe. But then like how much after that were you like 100% again?
Well, it probably took, it was almost a year where I could say, like, still go outside and take a long walk and start having some energy and start doing some normal things. But I'll admit, to this day, I'm not fully where I was. But this side effects of the chemo, you know, like I do have some issues with my memory, to be honest. You know, just to recall, it'll be very frustrating because it's something I know. Mm-hmm. I just can't come up with the words. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it'll come out, you know, 2 hours later. You know, so it's just, you know, and they say that's common with chemotherapy. They call it chemo brain. And again, my immune system is weaker than it was. So I tend to, if I do get a cold or something, it just takes longer to shake it. Where years ago, this is a true statement. I actually went 22 years, my first 22 years in teaching, I never called in sick once. Wow. So I think that was part of my issue early on, maybe being a little too prideful, because people used to kind of joke and say, yeah, Bruce doesn't get sick. He's like Superman, you know, and he never misses work. And so I'm almost trying to live up to that initially. It's like, no, you got to let that go, because you're not. You are human, and you got to let people, you know, support you.
We're now in 2020, and with the new year comes new opportunities. Make this the year you advance your career by earning your master's degree. Get started today at Ashford University. Ashford University is higher education at your own pace. It's a WSC-UC accredited institution that offers innovative online degree programs to help you achieve your higher education goals. Ashford University's flexible scheduling provides students with the opportunity to achieve higher education goals while still balancing work, home, and family life. Higher learning is more accessible than ever. Gain skills you can use in your job right now and knowledge that prepares you for the market of tomorrow. We're all so busy nowadays and our schedules are completely hectic, but the cool thing about Ashford University is that it allows you to study wherever you're comfortable learning and at your own pace. Ashford University's 6-week-long courses allow you to take one course at a time, and being enrolled in one class at Ashford means you are considered a full-time student. Plus, it's super easy enrollment. The GRE, GMAT, and other standardized test scores are not required for enrolling at Ashford University. Seriously, what's there not to love about Ashford University? It's convenient, it's flexible, it's super easy to enroll in it, and it helps you get to that next level in your career. So get ready to grab new opportunities. Start your master's degree today. Enroll by going to ashford.edu/eliteman. That's ashford.edu/eliteman to start your master's degree today. ashford.edu/eliteman. It's funny too, because that kind of became your identity as like the Superman. I'm Bruce. I never get sick. And, you know, then you get cancer at some point, stage 4. It's like, shit, I used to be Superman. What happened to him? And then you just, you know, you try to put that facade on and still be tough. But like you said before, man, it's good to open up and talk about things with people and get that support. You mentioned before too your spirituality, religious side. I know you're a Christian. How did that help you through your process? And not so much the religious aspect of it, like we mentioned before the call, but more of the spirituality and having that greater belief, that greater power. What was that like during this process?
Well, I believe we all have a purpose in life. You know, that I believe our Creator made us with certain gifts and that He wants us to be healthy and to live those out. And I just believed I had too much more to accomplish in life. Not necessarily, obviously it changed my focus from, I was always more job oriented, getting to the next level, getting, you know, like with the coaching, I kept moving up the levels. I became a building principal. I thought, well, I'm going to be a superintendent and I'm going to, you know, and so the spiritual side was showing me, you know, those, I guess, worldly things are important and good to have a better job, a higher title, more wages. But on the spiritual level, I started to look at people differently and see, I guess, just try to be more mindful of how other people think, how other people feel, how connecting with them more so on a deeper level. Because like the one thing that I did when I started to call my friends when I did get sick, I started to tell them the things that were unsaid. You know, I would tell them how much I appreciate them as a friend, and you know, just say things that, you know, sometimes it's not till people pass away where you say things, you know, you know, and you go, oh, I wish I would have told them this, or I wish I would have told them that. So on a spiritual level, I think I started to connect with people more and to not just be the coach or the principal or the teacher, but to truly be Bruce, who I am, because we're not what we do, you know, if that makes sense. So I was connecting more with who I am and, you know, and being more mindful of who other people are. And I think, because I had heard the saying one time, don't, you know, we shouldn't be trying to change people so much, but just love them for who they are. So I just found myself being more accepting and understanding and seeing the positive side of people and things instead of the negative. And so it's sort of changed my outlook on people in general, and just knowing I needed a deeper connection with them all.
What do you think, though, is the, or what would you attribute the main reason for your recovery for? Like you said, you're not 100% like you were before, but you're pretty much there. Just a couple things here and there that will probably never be the same. But I mean, for all intents and purposes, you recovered, you beat stage 4 cancer.
Yes.
What would you attribute the number one reason for that success to?
Well, I think it's hard to overcome anything in life if you don't believe it can happen. And again, because of my faith, I believed it could happen. Because of my experience as a coach, as a teacher, I knew that if you set a goal and you give everything you have toward it, only then do you have a chance to make it. And so when I got sick, you do start to look at your mortality more. And I did get more into my faith and looking at what I truly believe, what's truly on my heart, you know, and started to think more about, you know, if something did happen to me, you know, I want to know, like, my friends and family, you know, are like, I believe there's a heaven and I believe that there's an eternity. And I just believe I'm going to be there. And I want to, so I started to think more about the relationships I have and I don't want anyone else to be lost. I don't want anyone else to struggle where they don't need to struggle. I started to think more, far more about reaching out and building others people up than building myself up. And so again, that's part of the, I guess, the spiritual journey. And I just started to put my, my faith in others and other people as the center of my life than my career and my job. And so it just, I guess I started to find more and more joy in life doing that. Even though I had successes the other way, the more I included others, the more I built others up and included them in what I was doing, the more joy I was finding in my life and the more peace I was finding in my life. Realizing I don't have to have the title or necessarily the income to be happy with myself and who I am. Again, not just defining myself as what I do, but who I am. And I think years ago, I did look at who I am. Oh, I'm the coach, and I'm the principal, and that's fine. But that's what I did. That's not who I am. And I just started to connect more on a deeper internal level on who I am and who I'm meant to be.
And who do you think you are right now? Like, who would you define yourself as right now? And what do you define what you're meant to do, what you're meant to be?
Well, as a teacher, I've had lots of misgivings, in more so in the past few years with, because again, I teach science, and it sort of coincided with my health crisis, where there were lots of things with the teaching of evolution in the schools that I knew certain things scientifically couldn't be true or weren't true with evolution. And so as a teacher, I was thinking, you know, the state approved curriculum says we have to teach these certain things about evolution, but I knew I could disprove them with science-based facts. And so that was kind of weighing on me. And I guess what guided my direction was I just started to write things down, thinking, you know, I want what I speak and what I teach to my kids to be true. I want it to be, because if we're teaching something as science, I want it to be observable. It's got to be repeatable. You know, it's got to be measurable. And there were so many things about evolution that weren't. So these things that were weighing on my mind about evolution were also then kind of working synergistically with my spiritual life, saying, wait, and I started to discover there's so much intelligent design out there. There's intelligent design in everything. There's that can't be explained by these natural processes. So I started to see my role as expanding, my life as expanding to not just teach the kids in my classroom, but to teach as many people who are willing to listen. Wait, there's more to this evolution thing that there might be something else going on here. And I believe, again, wholeheartedly, there's a creator, and I can give you lots of examples of where there's intelligent design and things that are unexplainable by natural causes. So to me, it was, I see myself as a teacher, and I want to teach that creation. And because I don't just believe it, but I can back it up with science. You cannot prove that there's a God with science, but you can show certain things are unexplainable by natural causes. And that's what I do. But the intelligent design and things show that there has to be an intelligent designer. Therefore, I believe in a creator and God. But I would like to think, at the very least, even if someone isn't religious, they would like to know that the truth about origins, the truth about, or if there is evidence against evolution, what that is, that they would want to know that just on a truth level. And I'm just hoping people are open-minded to listen to that side, to listen, because it was very frustrating to me in the textbooks in schools. It's all one-sided, and evolution is spoken in matter-of-fact terms when there's so many things that science does not support about evolution. And even Charles Darwin had said lots of things that if we don't find certain things, that his theory will be unproved, not sound, and those things have not happened. And I could tell you about those if you want, but
Yeah, we'll dive into that in a moment. I am curious to know. And I think you make a great point, though, overall. I think that science and the school system and just the country in general, the government and kind of the way it steps in and controls things, it is very one-sided oftentimes. And I had a guy on the show, you may have heard of him, Perry Marshall. He wrote a book on this very subject, creationism versus evolution. And he's pretty well known as far as writing books, and he's a pretty best-selling author, pretty well known. But he had a similar a standpoint as you, where it was like he came in actually looking to prove evolution and all the stuff that goes behind it. But the more he dug into it, the more he saw that there was a lot of flaws in that. And then he kind of believed more in the creationism thing. But then he saw some flaws in that as well. And he was kind of in the middle. Like, they both had good points in some regards. And he just kind of put the information out there. He's like, let the audience, let the people decide on their own. But know that there is two sides. There isn't just black and white here. It's not evolution is 100% right, creationism 100% wrong. It's somewhere in the middle, I think. Or, you know, whether you choose one side or the other, at least you know that there is two sides, and you have to do the information yourself. You have to figure out that information yourself to figure out which side you land on, not just dismiss it all as, you know, religious nonsense or whatever, hyperbole or whatever you want to call it. But I want to dive into that in a moment. I just wanted to make the point. And like, even if you think about the school system and when it comes to doctors in this country, doctors spend all that time going to school. They take so many classes, and all they teach doctors is like one half of a course in nutrition, probably the most important part of your health, nutrition. Even doctors who go to all that schooling, I mean, you just right there, you know that there's a big flaw in a system like that, the medical system, when they're only teaching doctors one half of a course, one tiny little, I think it's like 40-something hours or whatever, contact hours they call it. Or no, it's 28 contact hours of actually learning about nutrition, the most important thing about your health. They don't even teach these guys. So if you think about it that way and you look at it objectively of like what they're teaching kids in school about evolution 100%, creationism 100% wrong, I mean, right there, man, that raises a huge red flag. They're probably missing something when they want to dismiss something entirely like that. And there is a whole new side. I'm not saying I agree with either one of them. I'm saying that you got to be you got to do your own due diligence and figure out yourself. But what are, I'm curious, what are some of the examples that you mentioned of intelligent design not being able to be explained by evolution?
Well, the very foundation of evolution is that a single-celled organism came out of inorganic, non-living material, that it just happened, like from the title of my book, from the goo of the ocean, in order for that to be true, again, you'd have to imagine that immediately the cell wall was made, the nucleus was made. Again, these all have different functions. There are vacuoles that expend waste. There's things that hold, store food. These all communicate to one another. And plus, the single celled organism can move. It can reproduce. So to believe all those things happened just in a happenstance, random happening is hard to believe. Now, obviously, since the time of Aristotle, people have been trying to combine non-living things and create something to live. Scientists today are trying desperately to do it. They can't do it. In the best laboratories today, there's not one scientist that could take any inorganic, non-living materials, put them together and create a living cell. It can't be done. And that's with, again, our scientists, our most intelligent people, trying to do it, and not just something randomly happening in an ocean. And probably the greatest thing that just totally shows that can't happen is modern DNA research. Because we know a single-celled organism has DNA. For instance, if I told you that a book from Shakespeare, a Romeo and Juliet, could write itself, that could just write itself, bind itself, and be like that, you'd say, well, that's crazy. Well, the DNA in a single-celled organism is actually many volumes longer than Romeo and Juliet. But again, yet it can move, it can eat, it can sense things in its environment. Well, the book can't do that. And it can reproduce itself, and a book can't do that. So a single-celled organism is actually far more sophisticated than one of Shakespeare's books. yeah, we would look at a book can't create itself. And again, the DNA is in every single celled organism. Well, you'd have to believe that, again, if you believe in evolution, that it wrote itself, that DNA code wrote itself. And again, yet it's beyond, like Bill Gates says that the human DNA is far beyond anything we can comprehend, you know, that or anything that we can possibly program. I'm paraphrasing. And so it's, if we can't program, if we couldn't make the DNA for a single-celled organism, how could it just have written itself? You know, so again, it's just the logic of that doesn't make sense. Then, for instance, in the fossil record, you know, Charles Darwin said there has to be transitional fossils, you know, from smaller things to bigger things, and he searched desperately for that. But and even in his later years, he admitted, and I quote him in my book, that he wasn't finding these transitional fossils. That in what they call the Cambrian explosion, obviously prior to that, there was just single-celled organisms in the fossil record. Then all of a sudden, boom, every phyla that there is known today was there. Suddenly, you know, so you go from single-celled organisms to organisms with arms, legs, compound eyes. And he had said if the fossil record doesn't show small gradations, it causes small, subtle changes over millions of years, then the theory is incorrect, you know, and that has not been followed in the fossil record. As a matter of fact, they call it stasis. And he said if you could point to any, even one organism that all of a sudden is there and there's no transitional forms to it, he said his theory is not true. And so again, boom, all of a sudden there were whales and giraffes and they've been the same in the fossil record, you know, till today. They haven't changed, you know, so that's just a couple of examples. But I think the biggest thing that most people can relate to is DNA. The DNA code is so sophisticated that you'd have to believe it wrote itself, because you have to have the DNA, even in a single-celled organism, for it to reproduce itself. And again, that's a very complicated and sophisticated process. You know, so how would that DNA, if the first cell had that, but then it would have to know how to duplicate itself and to separate into two new cells. And it just doesn't seem like that's reasonable to think that all happened randomly and by natural causes. Since, again, our best programmers couldn't even write the DNA for a single-celled organism today.
Yeah. And I think, too, you know what's funny about the whole thing is that people will tend to not want to believe in, say, Christianity or creationism or other religions, but they will believe in the religion of science or what they think is the religion of science. Like, they'll believe in a philosophy, they'll believe in a theory. But again, a lot of these things are just what they are. The theories, they're ideas. They're not proven in many regards. And so someone will tend to believe someone who has a good theory or that makes sense, like evolution, which is a good theory overall. I mean, it's pretty good overall, but there are holes in it. So it's right. It can't be 100% true. There's obviously mistakes, there's flaws in that theory. But it's funny that people will tend to stay away from something like creationism because it has that link to say Christianity or God, but they'll believe in another religion. It's kind of just cloaked as something else. It's pretended to not necessarily be a religion, but it is. And the same thing with politics, the same thing with health, same thing with medicine, across the board. I think there's a lot of things that people buy into without actually really knowing or even digging into the full story. And there's always two sides to every story. And I think it's good that you're here to help share some of the insights into that the other aspect, the other story, man. It's good to have someone like you and logically talk about it too, not just talking about, oh, there has to be a God, you know, I feel it, I know it. It's not like any of that crap. It's actually like there's a lot of science there, man, which I really appreciate. But just kind of wrapping things up, man, I want to mention purposeful living, which is something I know you cover. Can you just talk about what that is and how you implement that into your life every day?
Well, I guess having gone through the health crisis, I did you realize tomorrow isn't promised to anybody. So you did look at each day as a blessing, and you want to make the most of each day. And you want to, not just for yourself to be productive, but you want to help the other people around you have a better day. You want to help the other people around you be more successful. And not that I didn't look at life that way before, but it's the center of my focus now. You know, so whether it's a student that's getting into trouble, you know, I'll show a little more compassion or I'm just better at putting myself in the shoes of someone else, if it's a staff member or something, and just realizing that we all have a purpose and that we're all special and unique and we're not all going to think the same way. So to appreciate the differences of other people and to help build their talents and maybe help them to recognize their special abilities and that maybe things they didn't even know they could do, you know, and just to get the most out of life for yourself and others and not just go through the grind of each day just to get through it again and get to the weekend. You know, it's, you know, to be purposeful with each and every moment, each interaction. Because that's one thing I've learned working with kids. You never know the one thing you might say that impacts them possibly for their life. You know, because I think back to teachers and coaches I had. Sometimes, you know, I still think about things they said to me. But at the moment, that moment, they didn't realize it was going to have that impact on me. Only I know that. So I guess I don't want those moments to slip away when I'm with anybody I'm interacting with during the course of the day, because it again might be a bit more impactful than you realize, and the little things do matter.
That's awesome, man. I love that message, and you're so right about that. You never know how much your words, and even, you know, this interview or another interview you do, and the book you have, all the little things that you do in life, whether you realize it or not, they have a huge impact in people's lives. And it's cool too, like doing this podcast for the past few years, I get random messages all the time where it's like, you know, I do the show and it's great to do it and I have fun and, you know, make some money off it, sponsorships and stuff. But it's like, what you really appreciate, the best moments is when I get a random message and just say, I've been listening to your show for, you know, X amount of time, Justin. It did this, this, and this for me. I really appreciate it. You don't know how much this show helped me or how much your podcast helps me. And it's like, dude, I really had no idea it helped people like that until, you know, you start to hear those types of things. And it's like, those really are the best moments. When you get messages like that, you know what you're doing is actually mattering and it's making an impact. Albeit, you know, how small or how major that is, it's making an impact on the world. And, you know, that's what I really appreciate the most. Bruce, just kind of wrapping things up, man. What is a last send-off takeaway message you'd like to leave the Elite Man audience, and then a place our listeners can check out your work, your social media, the book you have, all those links? What do we got?
Well, I want people to be, like you were saying earlier, open-minded to the possibilities about, again, not always believing everything like about evolution. There are other sides to the argument. And again, I believe in a creator, but I back it with science. And I guess I just want people to look at that science, let the science speak for itself, and don't shut people down who might think differently, you know. And so that's what I'm hoping, that people will take another look at maybe it's something they've believed for a long time, you know. And it not even necessarily just in evolution versus creation, but anything, you know, just to reevaluate, you know, where you are in life and be open-minded and willing to take in new information and maybe change your position on things. And again, I think people will be surprised how much science supports intelligent design, and they're going to be amazed that, you know, that there's got to be something more than evolution. And so then I just hope once you get to that realization, then you will seek more truth. Yes, I'm hoping that it will lead you to a faith, like I'm a Christian, you know, but I want you to seek that truth and to do it with your own eyes and your own research. Because again, I'm not going to impose what I believe, but I just want you to find the peace and joy that I have through my journey in researching all this. Again, my book is From Goo to God. Again, the goo is from Godless Ocean Origins to God, Grace Ordained Designer. And again, it's a science-based defensive creation over evolution. And it's on Amazon. You can get the ebook on there too. And I'm also on Facebook and Instagram at Bruce R. Mattson and the number one. So I love to, if you could ever read the book and have comments, give me feedback. Again, I'm always looking to learn, and that's what I hope, that we can all learn from one another and be better for it.
Love it. Thanks, Bruce, for coming on the show, man. Really do appreciate it. And I know our guys are going to love this one. So take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, Justin. I appreciate it.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I'd like you to do, and that's this. Subscribe to our podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast episodes and all of our world-class advice absolutely free. Subscribe now if you haven't already and become an Elite Man today. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an amazing review. We really do appreciate it.